Welcome back. Our guest this week is Dan Quisenberry, president of the Charter School Association, who's upset with the governor's K-12 budget proposals. Our lead story, the governor's appearing in commercials to sell her road plan. On the OTR panel, Lauren Gibbons, Zoe Clark, and Bill Ballinger. Sit in with us as we get the inside out off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Business Leaders for Michigan, dedicated to making Michigan a top 10 state for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. More information about the employers working to accelerate Michigan's status is available at businessleadersformichigan.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Hi, welcome back to Off the Record. It's cold here this morning. What one was low zero? Goodness gracious. Yeah, all right. Well, spring is coming. All right, so have you all seen the governor's commercial? Yes.
Yeah. And roads, yes.
Let's take a look at the story. The governor's commercial shows lousy roads, and then the commercial blames the legislature for roadblocking the governor's road fix idea.
But Lansing legislators keep putting up roadblocks to road repairs.
And the commercial features the governor promoting her $3.5 billion bonding program to fix some of the roads now. But Republican Senator Ken Horn observes,
I've never seen anybody sell a bond with super PAC money.
And he thinks the ad may have a hidden agenda.
Looks a lot like a campaign commercial, so I'm not quite sure how the people are going to respond to it. I've had people in my district that come up and go, are they really trying to sell the fact that we're borrowing money?
And he thinks the only thing missing from the commercial?
Yeah, I'm the governor. I endorse this campaign commercial.
The governor has raised from special interest groups a six-figure budget to promote her issue. The money is from unnamed special interest groups that want to build more roads. Some Republicans who might criticize the governor say this is using dark money, unreported money, to make her pitch. And the governor's defenders counter.
Literally those upstairs who have gutted most of the campaign laws, have allowed for dark money to be spent in politics, unlimited corporate dollars to be spent here in Michigan with no tracking whatsoever and actually outlawed tracking, are criticizing someone else in terms of ethics and campaign stuff. That's great. That's pretty rich.
On the criticism that the governor is appearing in a thinly disguised re-election commercial, Senator Irwin argues President Trump had one of his own last week.
That's pretty funny coming from the party of dark money, Don, right? Don the con, the president. He's using the State of the Union as a presidential campaign commercial.
On the Republican charge that this is a pre-2022 re-election commercial for the governor.
I'm sorry, is that a criticism?
It's unclear how long these spots will run. All right, so why is she doing this, Lauren?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that she wants to be the main point person on this issue. She wants people, the public, to think that this is something that she is going to be the leader on, that the legislature's not doing it, so she is. So she's trying to sell this bonding plan as part of that, saying she kind of used the wording go it alone or, the plan B now that the legislature's not working with me. So this ad is part of an overall strategy to get the public to think she's working on it, the legislature isn't.
This ad is the personification of the one line in the state of the state. When you see all those orange barrels, remember it's our administration that this is what this is all about. Right,
exactly. It's the continuing of this messaging and really the continuation of 18 again and fix the dam roads, right? And this is sort of the fix the dam roads 2.0. That the gas tax idea, which of course went flat, the 45 cents per gallon, this is now a new iteration at $3.5 billion in bonds. And so this is the continuation of we're trying to fix the roads, we're being the administration, and Republicans in the legislature are not coming to the table. Now, you can make an argument for whether, how accurate that is.
But I thought it was interesting that she referred to the legislature, not the Republicans in the legislature. Missed opportunity. Why not take a shot at them?
A little too much. She got her message across. I think everything Lauren has always said is absolutely correct. I think she's trying to define the debate right now. She's not going to be behind the curve. Last year, she comes out with 45 cents per gallon, obviously flopped. And she didn't really, did she drive around last year doing a commercial saying we got to have a 45? No.
I don't recall.
But she was incredibly on message during 19 talking about fix the dam roads. I mean, she did the town halls.
Proposal.
No, but I mean, I remember right after the budget proposal, she was going all over the state talking about the need. I think there was even a PowerPoint presentation, if I'm remembering. remembering correctly.
London Bridge is falling down. You know, she did yeah. that. All right, but this is unusual. We've never seen
it
a governor. This is the day after the state of the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She goes to the special interest groups. Am I correct? Aren't these the road building folks that are funding this? Who else would be giving her money?
You've got to make some assumptions.
Yeah, okay. But it's very unusual.
It is unusual. Like, for instance, one time it would have been done previously, but we were in an era before TV ads. Like, George Romney spent 3 months after he was first elected in 62 going around the state selling the Constitution, the new Constitution, which was on the ballot on March 1st, 2 months after he took office. And it only passed by 10,000 votes. And everybody gave him credit for selling it. So honestly, this is the first time I can think of since way back then that a governor has done anything like this.
Well, look at, and as Senators Irwin and Hertel both said, it is legal. And you know, to the point in it where you were asking them about, you know, being, you know, shocked, the gambling is happening here, right? That this sort of, that if Republicans are pushing back, that a lot of the legal reasons that an ad like this is allowed is because of what Republican lawmakers have done over the past decade.
Yeah. So. And just to go back to your point about why she didn't name Republicans, I think then if she named Republicans, it would sound even more like a political attack ad, whereas I think she's trying to make the issue point. We need the roads fixed, and the legislature's not doing it.
This is an inoculation ad. Okay, 2022 is a long ways down the road, okay? But get that in people's mind that I'm the one that's doing this. That's what the message is. Mm-hmm. So it's a quasi-campaign commercial, and I didn't endorse it, but she paid for it.
I do think it's an interesting environment in which we find ourselves with this ad, though, especially leading up to the Michigan primary, when I assume we might talk about Michael Bloomberg, right? But just how much time right now, if you turn on the television, at least commercial stations here in Michigan, blanketed with Michael Bloomberg ads, right? And so wondering sort of what environment does another political ad, this one local, are viewers just going, it's campaign season. It's crazy season. This is where what everyone's talking about. It's all, you know, them versus us, road issues, Michael Bloomberg issues. Or does this register in a different way because it is the governor?
All right, let's talk about what happened in the Senate yesterday. The governor had an appointee to the DNR be not appointed.
Yes, the Natural Resources Commission appointee Anna Mitterling. Sunday was the last day that the Senate could use the advice and consent process to disapprove of the appointment or let the appointment go through. They, in a 20-16 vote, chose to reject her appointment. And in a statement, Senator Mike Shirky said that her testimony wasn't good enough. They said that she was not aware of the immensity of the commission. At this point, she'd already been to a commission meeting, and she had already been at the latest commission meeting, which was actually yesterday when this vote was happening, and had to be pulled out of the meeting. So it's
would they send the state cops over to arrest her?
Well, I think she was just told, and she was not there for the rest of the meeting.
And the backstory to this is the fact that late last week, Governor Whitmer decided she was also going to add a former Grand Rapids Mayor George Hartwell, which is really where it seems to be that there was an issue, that Republicans were unhappy with her appointment because what they are saying is George Hartwell's statements on gun rights and issues. And that there was some kind of negotiation and certainly not ended up being a compromise between Republicans and the governor, that they didn't want Hartwell. And so that this is taking out on this candidate instead of waiting to just simply not vote or to vote against George Hartwell.
The statement was made that Mr. Shirky allegedly goes to the governor and says, if you withdraw Hartwell, we'll let her go through. The governor says, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, I mean, look, the optics are terrible for the Republicans. It set up the party, the Republicans, for criticism for being sexist. They basically say, withdraw Hartwell, governor, or else we're going to reject the woman, not Hartwell. And the woman was kind of an empty slate. Nobody knew anything about her.
But she had the credentials, the D's.
She had credentials. There's one thing I'll just mention. She would have supported the governor's baiting ban. And the legislature felt strongly about that. They passed a bill she vetoed just a couple of months ago.
I will just say that that was not brought up at all yesterday by any Senate Republican that I spoke with. And I will say that I watched the committee hearing where they asked her a lot of questions. She was asked quite a bit about the baiting ban. She was asked about several other issues. But she really presented herself well, in my personal opinion. And it seemed as though, you know, it didn't seem as though the Senate Republicans on the panel were thinking at that time, this is a bad candidate. We need to get you out of here. Well, and I will say that she also, you know, she does have a master's degree in fisheries and wildlife, and she has spent her career working on these issues.
Hertel said, look, the NRA got to the Republicans and said, Mr. Hartwell, we don't want him, get rid of him. And so they tried to wiggle around this thing, and she became basically collateral damage.
She was, and I think that would be what you would expect the Democrats to say, whether there's any evidence that Curtis Hertel has that the NRA twisted the Senate Republicans' arm. You know, look, I don't think they wanted either one of these people, the Republicans. They weren't ideal. There are certain commissions that are flashpoints for trouble in confirmation. NRC is one of them. Another one is the Mackinac Island State Park Commission. Remember that? There have been people rejected for that because these are plums, and they have major policy influence, and neither one of these people look good to the Republicans. But why would they allow Hartwell to go through and not Mitterling?
Well, we don't know what's going to happen with Hartwell yet. The Senate could vote as early as next week is the understanding on whether or not his appointment moves forward. At least that's what George Hartwell is saying, as early as next week. I mean, look, the issue, Bill, as you said, is this is not a good look for Senate Republicans right now. You've got Pete Lucido on this committee. And as Lauren said, this whole deer baiting ban issue, when you spoke with state senators, Republicans yesterday, it seemed like they were still trying to figure out what their talking points were. And there's something that one wonders, look, if this is political, you know, Republicans in the past have been happy to say, we don't like what this governor is doing, therefore we are taking a vote against this governor. I wonder why not just take the political calculation and say that. We were unhappy she didn't compromise with us, instead of taking it out on this person who does seem to be, as you said, qualified.
And just to build off of that, the Natural Resources Commission is a volunteer position. Appointments come forward and volunteer their time to do this job. And one of my sources pointed out to me yesterday, this could have a chilling effect on people who come forward to volunteer for these appointments. If they see someone who has all these qualifications go through the ringer at the committee level, and then the last session day before their 60-day appointment period expires, you know, to get rejected, you know, who's going to want to put themselves and their families through that?
If we ask the public the import of this story on a scale of 1 to 10, on a good day, it's probably a 2. But if you ask the governor, this is a 10+, because it does have implications for this bipartisan cooperation. Let's, you know, not sing the Jennifer Granholm hymn, you know, Kumbaya. Mm-hmm. Is this a one-off, or is this a portending of things to come?
Well, we don't know that. Right now, I agree with your assessment. Curtis Hertel said it. He said, you know, is this a breakdown in relations between the governor and legislature? He says, it's an avalanche, he said. That's what he said. So he thinks this is a sign of real trouble.
As you said, you know, whether this makes the headlines, whether it seems important to the public or not, but you did mention Jennifer Granholm so quickly, we should say that, at least putting this in context, this is the first time since the Granholm administration that the Senate hasn't okayed. So let's just put that in context. This doesn't happen every single day in Lansing.
All right, quick. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I would just add that, you know, in the context of all of the things currently happening in the Senate, the Lucido investigation and overall the Me Too movement, this could have some implications for the public. The public could see this as another indication that things aren't being handled properly. And it goes back to, as both of you said, an optics situation, and how the Senate handles this moving forward is going to be pretty crucial.
All right, let's talk about charter schools. Dan Quisenberry, come on in.
Dan Quisenberry is president of the Michigan Association of Public School Academies, representing 90% of the charter schools in Michigan and some 150,000 students. He's been with the group since 1998, after serving a stint at the State Chamber of Commerce and being an administrator at a Michigan law firm.
Mr. Quisenberry, Bell, welcome back to Off the Record.
Hey, good to be here.
Good to
welcome
see you, everybody. Z?
Yeah, so of course, the governor outlined her budget proposal for this next fiscal year last week. This is going to have some implications for charters in Michigan. Give us a quick rundown of where you stand in terms of the governor's budget proposal.
Yeah, priorities are right. There's no disagreement about that at all. She's prioritizing education, which is important, obviously. Looking at how do we help kids that have the greatest needs, so the weighted formulas, focusing on kids in poverty, English language learners, that's all the right kind of stuff. The questions we're gonna have, obviously, coming off the round of vetoes and budget negotiations from last fall, is we're watching how this is done pretty closely, because if we're really looking at equity in all kids, it should include all kids, regardless of the school that their parents choose to send them to.
So left charters out?
There are some things that, at least by the initial evaluations, that would be true. There's some ways the weighting works. The universal pre-K program specifically defines charters out. It's only going to go to districts. There's even some pretty highly respected private programs like the Skillman Foundation or Wayne State's preschool program that would not be included in that funding. If you're a kid in poverty, you're a kid in poverty. And we understand it's a pilot and not all kids would participate yet, but we ought to be setting it up so that kids can and parents can.
Why
and
would
not
you
pick.
Do that?
It's a good question. Those are things that we'd love to have the media explore more. We ought to be working as a state towards really talking about all kids, all public schools, all public school teachers. And let's get past this discussion we've been having for 20 plus years, 26 years, about what kind of public schools that we have. We have a system of schools.
During the last budget cycle, charter schools kind of got caught up in some of these line item vetoes. Is the relationship between charter schools and the governor's administration repaired for this budget cycle?
You know, Gretchen Whitmer was in the House and in the Senate. We never had issues with Governor Whitmer. I don't think that's it. I just think there's politics around all of it. And this is a broader statement. As adults, we just need to get past this. Michigan's education system is not where it needs to be. And we've been arguing about this stuff since the 60s. So until we all come together, regardless of your party, regardless of your point of view in the world, and we start getting behind how do we actually improve education for kids, holding up our teachers, we're not going to make it. So I'd like to think that won't, you know, let's just get past that. We're certainly interested in that.
The politics of the situation is, in your mind, she is carrying the water for the MEA at your expense. Is that a fair statement?
We certainly learned this week that some things at the
question, is she carrying the water for the MEA at your expense?
I think she's being told things by organizations like that. We certainly saw publicly what the MEA thinks about public charter schools in this state. And if that's what she's being told, yeah, it's going to have some impact on her decisions.
The president of the MEA took a shot at you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Said some pretty mean-spirited, angry things about our teachers and our schools and the things that we're trying to do to serve our communities.
And they were wrong?
Absolutely. Not factually based at all, but you guys were just talking about some things that in our society we're learning we need to be more sensitive about the words we use and the things we say. Seriously, the president of a teachers union is going to attack public school teachers just because of the school that they choose to teach in? We got to get past that. If we're going to improve education, we need to change the conversation and hold all kids up and even encourage teachers. Charter school teachers are relentless and tireless.
What are the percentage of students in Michigan that are charter school students now compared to, let's say, 10 years ago? About the same?
Yeah, frankly, Bill.
What, so, 17, 18%?
No, it's not that high. It's 10% statewide. Okay. Then there's important percentages, like in communities like Detroit, where it's about half of the kids.
Speaking of percentages or size, under the Snyder years, the cap on charter schools, mm-hmm. the amount of charter schools right in the state was lifted. And mm-hmm. so we've seen a really big increase. And I think that was huge for the charter school movement to lift that cap. What is something that you might feel legislatively over the next few years, if you had a wish list, you would want, you know, changed to you think help charters, aside from money in a governor's budget? But are there laws on the books that are still not helpful for charters in your mind?
No, great question, Zoe. The facts are, though, that that cap did not have that impact. We did not see a huge increase in the number of charter schools. We've been at about 300 charter schools for almost 10 years.
And yet Michigan still has some of the largest number of charters in the nation.
That's not true either, but thank you. California, Florida, no, it doesn't.
Size of population. I'm not talking about...
No, that's true. 10%, we're still pretty low. We've got communities like Detroit that the percentage is high, but the actual number, that's just not true.
But what about children in poverty who are in charters? I mean, I think you can look at numbers however you want, but the fact is Michigan has been at the forefront of the charter movement, that we do proportionally in districts have large amounts of charters that other states don't have.
Yes, but Detroit's a significant community in terms of percentage. Mm-hmm. But this is an illustration. You asked a good question. I want to come back to it. We're still having this conversation 26-some years later. Hey, we're public schools. We're part of the public school system. The important legislation is making sure that the equitable funding that the governor is talking about actually goes to kids, that we talk about academic performance and accountability. Those are things that, we're holding teachers up. We have a crisis in the supply of teachers in this state. No one should be talking ill of them and calling them highway robbers. That's ridiculous.
But your critics contend that you like to talk that you're part of the public school system, but in some ways you are not. For example, your for-profit companies, your critics say, they don't disclose where the money's going. The public schools have a budget. You know where all the money's going. How do you reconcile that kind of argument?
Yeah. Another point that people need to learn the facts. I called Paula Herbert this week and said, hey.
After this piece ran.
Because I know her. We sit around the Launch Michigan table together. The facts in here are just wrong, Paul. I'd be more than willing to sit down with you and go through this. Because the reality is, Tim, even when a school, a public school, nonprofit, contracts with a provider that's for profit, every dime spent at that school is publicly available. You go click on that Michigan information system, you can see the same things.
So what did she say when you told her this?
Well, that's not true, Dan. These are the facts we need to get to. But again, really, these are 26-year-old conversations. And do they move student performance forward? Do they help us solve the teacher talent problem? No, they don't. Let's get after that.
The criticism is that charter schools cherry pick. You don't have as many disadvantaged students. Respond to that.
We have twice as many kids in poverty, twice as many minority students. One of the things in the governor's budget, she's cutting funding to strict discipline academies. These are schools that serve adjudicated youth or kids that have been expelled. I've met multiple felon 10th grader boys, and she's cutting our funding for that? That's ridiculous. Let's get past that and say, if we're going to hold up all kids and that's the right strategy, let's do that. And let's encourage public educators.
You mentioned several times that, this conversation has been going on for 26 years. What exactly can charter schools do to work with, some of these critics and say, we want to get past this. We want to, be a key player in this conversation?
Yeah, good question. We're wrestling with that, Lauren, because certainly some of that's on us to say we need to build some awareness about what are the answers to the questions. But some of it is refocusing the discussion so that we're really talking about kids, improving academic outcomes, working on the teacher talent issues, et cetera.
The third grade reading law has, was likely to go into effect in just the next month in terms of letters actually being sent saying whether or not a child could be held back. Where do you, speaking for charters, stand on whether or not you're for Governor Whitmer re-looking at that law?
Yeah, it's really a discussion that was provocative when it was had. The focus on literacy is correct. Retention is the thing everybody argues about, and we all have concerns about what happens. But not being able to read is also a problem. So we really didn't weigh in exactly on that, but we're supportive of accountability.
You didn't take a position at the time it was debated?
We were supportive of it because the
you
focus
were more
on literacy.
Supportive than the MEA and DFT and
probably
organizations
would be true.
Like that.
And I've asked the question, continue to ask the question, if not retention to focus us, then what? Because if we aren't teaching kids to read, what are we doing? And I know that's the focus when I'm sitting with a group of charter folks.
The other side said, yes, but retention comes with it, a stigma, which is bad for kids long term, you all said.
So does not reading in the 10th grade have a stigma? I'll tell you this related story. This young man, this 10th grader that I met at this prison for young boys, you know what his passion was? He discovered at this prison charter school? Reading. And his eyes just lit up. Mr. Quisenberry, you know, I love to read this, and I love to read this. And in my head, I'm thinking, when did we let this young man down? So, yeah, we're concerned. Some schools, as I talk to them, they're ready. They're doing their best. There's lots of off-ramps. But the focus is right. And I think it relates to this bigger question of let's focus on how we move kids forward and stop talking about, well, charters are doing this or districts are doing that.
When you look back over 25 years ago when John Engler first really kind of launched charter schools, he was a hero to the charter school movement. Then you have Governor Granholm, you have Governor Snyder, and now you have Governor Whitmer. Were all those governors pretty much on the same page in terms of their attitude toward charter schools? Were some more supportive than others? What problems did you have, let's say, with Granholm and Snyder?
I think all of them were open. Well, let me say it that way. I still see Governor Whitmer that way. I know this budget discussion, I think, was a budget political move more than it was about charters. At least I want to continue to think that.
Another way to her base.
That's just what I was going to say. Her base chooses charter schools. That's just the reality of it. You can see candidates nationally being asked that question. Wait a second. We like having the opportunity to choose the public school we're going to go to.
Do you want to hang around for a little overtime?
Sure.
All right, good. Let's do closed credits. Go to WKAR.org for more of Mr. Quisenberry on the charter school issue. Stay tuned.
Thanks, guys.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Business Leaders for Michigan, dedicated to making Michigan a top 10 state for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. More information about the employers working to accelerate Michigan's status is available at businessleadersformichigan.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.